So, Advent is here, and it's here in a big way today. It feels like a really Advent-y day, as many of you were here for a good portion of the day, or at least from 1:30 or so onwards. So Advent has truly arrived, and this is the second week. Last week, the Worship Collective helped us begin this journey of expectation, of waiting and longing for Christmas and the arrival of Jesus in the manger. And the kids shared that with us this afternoon as well, this kind of anticipation, this arrival of Jesus in the manger. And Rob framed the community prayer and the kids' moment last week in this idea of hope, and that hope as being this, what moves us forward in this season is this longing, this belief, this trust in that something's going to happen, and in this time of waiting for that. And hope can be both an endpoint and a beginning point, because often the last thing to kind of go in a difficult situation is the hope that things can be different. But it's also the thing that moves you out of a difficult situation is that hope, that belief that there's something flying in front of my face. There truly was. I'm going to have to delete this section out of the recording. There's a TV show where one guy through the whole episode is swatting at something and they think he's all going crazy, and then they finally see that there is actually something flying around the studio. I don't know what show it is, but truly, it was there. So the first thing to break into a situation of despair is hope. And one of my kind of favorite bands as a teenager was Five Iron Frenzy, and there's a spin-off project called Brave Saint Saturn for songs that didn't quite fit into Five Iron Frenzy's third-generation ska style. And one of those songs is called Binary, and there's this line that always sticks out in the back of my mind, and it's that the bravest thing is always hope, because sometimes in difficult situations when everything is gone, it's hope that is just brave, trusting that things will get better, trusting that things will move on. And Advent is a time to almost slow down and then begin this process of hoping, this process of waiting, this process of hoping for peace, joy, and love to break into our lives, and recognizing that it has broken in the birth of Jesus. So we set ourselves in this model, this journeying in the same way as the people of Israel journeyed and waited in anticipation and expectation. They hoped for something to change. And there's glimpses in the Old Testament, there's glimpses leading up to the birth of Christ of hope, of peace and joy and love, but it's never lasting, it's never sustained in the history of the Israelite people. It's peace remained elusive, somewhat beyond the grasp, despite numerous attempts to try to find it. And we see this in the prophetic literature, this longing, this moving forward, this hope that something was going to change, something greater was going to happen, a renewal and change for the coming of peace, joy, and love to break forth out of darkness. And not just a temporary peace, but a true, lasting peace of restoration, of security, of safety for the people. The word peace is used in many contexts. It's used in salutations or greetings where people say, hey, peace. Or it's used in the settling of wars or conflicts or the ending of fighting. Sometimes we use it in this kind of phrase of peace and quiet. I need some peace and quiet in my life, and I'm hoping and longing for that. And sometimes it's almost as if the two words are bound together to form one meaning, that if there's quiet, then there's peace. And that's not always the case. Quiet does not always mean that we've entered a situation of peace, of wholeness, of things being put back together. And it made me think of the temporary quiet in World War I, where over the time of Christmas in 1914, there was a temporary ceasefire of sorts where they actually celebrated Christmas together. But in no way could you say that it was a peaceful situation, because they knew in a few days they'd be back at war. It wasn't peace, perhaps quiet for that short, brief time. Sometimes there are situations where, in a family unit or in workplace, where there's quiet, where people aren't talking to each other, but you know that the one wrong word could erupt into this situation of not peace, of animosity. And you know that the background of that situation isn't peace, it's just a temporary quiet. There isn't true peace until you can truly sit down with the person in a safe safety and security of that relationship and know that you can be honest and truthful and in a good situation with a person that is not just temporary, is not where one wrong word could set things off into a difficult situation. Peace treaties are, let's not be at war for this brief period of time in many cases, because there's always the tension, there's always that uncertainty that surrounds things. The peace that is hoped for in the Bible is one where the lion lies down with the lamb, where there is true security and safety, not temporary, not fleeting, not elusive. The peace that is promised through the prophetic voices and the peace that arrives and begins to arrive in the coming of Jesus is one of lasting, sustained harmony of things being put back together, a return out of chaos into beautiful order, the order that God intended, of creation, of relationships, of life. And I want to begin, the first passage I'd like to look at today is actually probably one of the darkest kind of sections of disorder and chaos, and that's in Lamentations. And I want to just pull out the verse that kind of moves towards hope and peace and restoration, and that is Lamentations 3:16-26. And Lamentations is written by, I don't know. And actually, for my Old Testament exam, that was what the answer you had to give on your exam was, I don't know. And I might have used that joke before, but it's a serious situation. Often it's connected to Jeremiah, and that's its place in the English canon, is right after Jeremiah, because how Jeremiah laments. And it's unlikely that it's written just by one person. Most of Lamentations is written in an acrostic, and there's actually a different letter order in a couple of the, or between two of the laments, so that would be odd to have been written by one person. But authorship doesn't really matter at all in this case. The context and the background to what is happening is the exile. It's that great catastrophe of the Old Testament where Jerusalem is destroyed, and the lamenter stands back and looks at the situation and is just completely done. He's completely finished. It's a situation of utter despair, utter destruction. He looks on the city, his city that was completely destroyed. And he depicts God not just as a passive person who steps back from the situation and doesn't intervene, but actually the one who is active in destroying the city. And this is a really strong language of lament against God. But in this section, he breaks out of lament and he begins to hope. And this beginning of hope is framed in the loss of peace. And I've included, or I mentioned that Lamentations is acrostic in this, in case you're interested, is the Wav to Teth section of Lamentations 3. And I'm going to begin with verse 16 for a slight little pun to get a taste of the type of lament that is in the passage. So let's read this together. He has made me chew on gravel. He has rolled me in the dust. Peace has been stripped away, and I've forgotten what prosperity is. I cry out, my splendor is gone. Everything I had hoped for from the Lord is lost. The thought of my suffering and homelessness is bitter beyond words. I will never forget this awful time as I grieve over my loss. Yet I still dare to hope when I remember this. The faithful love of the Lord never ends. His mercies never cease. Great is his faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh each morning. I say to myself, the Lord is my inheritance, therefore I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who depend on him, to those who search for him. So it is good to wait quietly for salvation from the Lord, and it is good for people to submit at an early age to the yoke of his discipline. So verses 16 to 20 are the final verses before the transition into hope, into this longing for something to change, and this recognition that it's God who acts. It's the God who hasn't completely abandoned them, who hasn't completely done away with his people. And verse 17 is particularly interesting because of this time when we're talking about peace. The lamenter here feels that peace has been stripped away and he's forgotten what prosperity is. In Hebrew, peace isn't the subject of the verb. It's either my soul, or it could mean, grammatically at least, God. But my soul is most likely the context, most likely the reference point of what is rejected. And it could be better to translate this: my soul is rejected from peace. There is no order, there is no safety, security in his relationship. He's completely disturbed. He doesn't have peace. There is no wholeness to his life as he looks on the city and he looks on his circumstances. Complete chaos, complete brokenness. There is no peace. And he's forgotten all the good things that are there. It's beyond grass. There's nothing good. And the Hebrew word for prosperity here is tov, is good, and that will be important in a couple sentences. There is no good situation for the lamenter. There is no good as he looks on his destroyed city. There is no peace. Verses 19 and 20 highlight bitterness and grief as he reflects on his situation. But and then verse 21, hope breaks in. And it's interesting how this is set out in Hebrew as well, because this comes right at the beginning of the phrase. This, as a pronoun, is at the beginning. And it's not explained what this might be in this first word. What is this? What is this that will turn his heart? What is this that he will hope in? And then comes and is then explained that it's the Lord's faithful covenant, steadfast love that will sustain him, that he will hope in, that he will have joy in. The moments just before, there doesn't seem to be any reason to hope. Peace is beyond his grasp. But when he remembers the character of his God, the lamenter breaks forth in hope. And he bases this on a few things. For his people were not completely destroyed, and compassion has not come to an end. The Lord has not left his people completely destroyed or abandoned. There's still something to hope for. And this is a profound statement as the people wrestle with everything that has gone on. To be able to say they're renewed every morning, the mercies, the covenant faithfulness of his God, and that great is God's faithfulness and trust. The hope that was just highlighted as gone in verse 21 comes forth in this verse here. The lamenter who, despite all things, recognizes that it's God in whom his hope is, the one who can bring him peace, joy, and love. And in verse 24, there's a slight difference from verse 21. It's almost set out the same. On account of this, I will hope. But then in verse 24, there's one small little phrase added. On account of this, I will hope in him. The lamenter draws his hope and his longing and his trust specifically on God in this verse. He realizes that is the source of his hope, the one to restore the peace that's been shut off from his soul. Verses 25 to 27 all begin with good. It's a good, good, good phrase. And verses 25 and 26 round out this section of hope and longing, statements of the good that was forgotten in verse 17. It's almost like the lamenter says, no, the Lord is good to those who depend on him, the ones who search for him. And it's also an imperative for the people to join in and say, no, we will search in him. We will search in our covenant faithful God. We will depend on him and on his faithfulness. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation from the Lord. And this hope, this could also be translated as wait. It's the same word in Hebrew, this wait, this hope, this longing that God will break in, that his mercies will indeed be new every morning. The lamenter recognizes that even in the darkest places, that there is hope, and his hope is found in Yahweh, his Lord. The mercies are new every morning. And as the dawn ends the darkness of night, so the mercies of Yahweh will break forth into the darkness of his present despair. Advent begins this time of lamenting coming to an end. Lamentations is a deep, dark book of despair and gloom, but in it there is a light. And with the birth of Jesus, this time of lamenting, this time of despair, this time of darkness has begun to come to an end. Signs of life in a barren desert. The glimpse of dawn in the morning. So with this, I'd like to read Isaiah 9, 1-7. And this highlights this moment of turning, this moment of darkness coming to an end and light breaking forth. Nevertheless, that time of darkness and despair will not go on forever. The land of Zebulun and Naphtali will be humbled. But there will be a time in the future when Galilee of the Gentiles, which lies along the road that runs from runs between the Jordan and the sea, will be filled with glory. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. You enlarge the nation of Israel, and its people will rejoice. They will rejoice before you, as people rejoice at the harvest and like warriors dividing the plunder. For you will break the yoke of their slavery and lift the burden from their shoulders. You will break the oppressor's rod, just as you did when you destroyed the army of Midian. The boots of the warrior and the uniform blood stained by war will all be burned. They'll be fuel for the fire. For a child is born to us, a son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. The compassionate commitment of the Lord of Heaven's armies will make this happen. Well, the primary literary context of Isaiah precedes Lamentations and the situation that goes on there. The struggle of darkness and gloom is similar to the fears of the people at those times. And in the New Testament, the hopes and dreams that are drawn on as people wrestle with the breaking in of light through the birth of Jesus are pulled upon, are united to declare that light has broken forth into darkness. And this Isaiah passage, Isaiah 9, is used many times to highlight this. The time for lament is over. It's a time to begin to turn and hope in Yahweh, to hope in his peace. In Advent, we declare, we sit back when we wait and we anticipate the light breaking forth into darkness to remind us that the light indeed has broken forth into darkness, has broken forth to bring light to our circumstances, to our relationships. And even though at times there are moments where we'd like to join with the lamenter and say that things are not right, that there is despair, that peace seems to be shut off, and we seem to have no hope, we take the time at Advent to recognize that the light has indeed broken forth, and to recognize that there is a waiting that we are presently in as we see signs of peace and light breaking forth into our lives. The long-awaited hope has come forth and has broken forth into darkness. But we're still in this time of waiting for true peace to finally break in completely, for true light to finally break in completely. And we're able to recognize that it has indeed started in many situations, in opportunities for renewed relationship, in opportunities to love one another, to express joy, to be at work in restoring peace in our cities and in our lives and in the people around us. It's a time to wait, assured that all things will be made new and that peace is breaking forth. And that indeed his mercies are new every morning in every circumstance in our life, even if times it seems that there is no peace or no hope. One of the things that struck me as I thought about waiting and anticipating for the fullness of something to happen was the Exodus story, and how we pull on, or how the table is connected to that tradition. And in the eating of the Passover meal, there was a waiting and anticipation, and a waiting within an expectant that night that the first Passover was celebrated. There was the declaration that something was going to happen, but as the people first partook of that story of the bread without yeast and with the Passover lamb, that they ate it with haste, they ate it with anticipation, but they waited in anticipation of something being about to happen, about their God breaking in. And in much the same way, we partake of the bread and the cup, recognizing that the light has indeed broken forth into darkness through Jesus, but also waiting in anticipation of when truly we'll be united with him and he will set all things to rights, when he will establish true peace and he himself will be the light of the world and there will be no more darkness. So as you come to the table tonight, take off a piece and eat in anticipation and in expectation for true peace to break forth into this world, but also recognizing that there's opportunities for peace to break forth in the many situations and interactions that we find in our lives.